Hey everyone, welcome to the Faith and Fandom Podcast. This is Hector Mirai, and today we are doing... So I'm finally watching The Chosen, and covering the last two episodes of Season 2, as finishing up what I currently have on hand, and just going through some thoughts on that. I'll say, after watching two whole seasons of this, I am still impressed, I am still encouraged, I am still dramatically surprised at how good it is, especially to be Christian entertainment television. Growing up in the generation I did, where a lot of Christian TV movies and such have been subpar in a lot of ways when it comes to storytelling, filmmaking, visuals, the whole deal. So it's been really, really neat to watch. So let's jump into some of the last couple episodes. With that, it might be the last three episodes. I've got my notes here. So first off, going back to the episode where Mary ran. I know I may be double covering some stuff, but I just wanted to hit it again. The episode where Mary ran away. And her acting in that episode, where she ran away, where she went to the gambling den, where the whole deal, her acting in that episode was fantastic. The one line where she had, "He already fixed me once. I broke again. I can't face him." That one statement, I feel like covers so much ground in terms of people who are, struggling, people who have been lost, people who have been willfully sinful, people who have just been in that place where they know that they did something that rejected and hurt and wounded the grace of God's given them. I feel that in my bones. He already fixed me once. I broke again, and I can't face him. And I'll be honest, I've never given much consideration to the post-traumatic stress that would come from being freed from a demon. Like, you know, most visual depictions of demon possession in cinema are always horror related. Or, you know, we get someone being freed from a demon and Merry Christmas, you're on your way. Not that you would have PTSD every time a demon popped around. And also the fact that, the first time that demon-possessed dude was approaching Mary, like even at a distance, I was like, I started yelling, "She's gonna have demon Spidey sense, and it's gonna be great." I mean, the faith that was also there, I do have faith in him, just not in me. Again, I think it's every broken sinner's cry, that it's easy to lose faith in ourselves, and we let the faith we lose in ourselves distance between us and God. And so that's an important thing. As they said, that's not much redemption if it can be lost in a day. That's not much of a redemption if it can be lost in a day. So for Mary to think that her redemption was easily lost, for her to think she had no place, for them to feel like, you know, one failure would be enough to completely separate them, you gotta realize grace was a new concept in that capacity. God's grace, so freely given in such a generous way, they'd never seen that before. We've never seen it that way since. And for them to see that it was still new, the fact that they could fail and still return. And when Mary is facing Jesus and says, "I just don't know if I can live up to it," and Jesus responds to her, "You don't have to. You just want your heart." This literally was the 1 John 1:9 situation. This was repentance. This was confession. This was acceptance. This was grace. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing. And you know, I loved it. So the interaction with Mary, with Jesus, the fact that he sent Matthew and Peter to go, I also thought was great, because you've got two opposite ends, but also making them work together for it. And Matthew's interaction with Mary to help bring her back, I also thought was super beautiful. So that episode kind of ended with a, you know, when Jesus made that statement, or when they asked Jesus, what's wrong with you? And, or apparently everything. I felt that, because if you look at what Jesus was doing and how Jesus calls us to live in the face of self-righteous society, everything you do is wrong. And so I just really enjoyed it. And yeah. Going on a little further in the next episode, further in the story. And this has just been one of these things. Again, I also never really put this much thought into how hard these Pharisees, these Sadducees, these religious leaders would have had, how much work would have actually taken to get their government and their religious leaders to actually do something to pursue Jesus. I've never given that thought. You know, it's almost comical, but it's also just completely evil seeing how hard they work to bring Jesus down. Atticus the centurion, fascinated with Jesus, is one of my favorite, you know, aspects of the story, of just how much he's just really pursuing who Jesus is, and that he's curious about it, and that he's got such a hang up with him. And Peter and Andrew, those two together are also hilarious in the way that they interact. And I get that they're brothers. And, you know, I forget when I read these stories in Scripture, because all these disciple names just kind of jumble together, that you were dealing with sets of brothers, that you were dealing with people who had their own family drama and family history and family relationships trying to follow Jesus at the same time. And I know, just having kids that, as my daughters try and work together, they can be a handful when they get on each other's nerves. And really giving the brotherly struggle and annoyance and situations together, I think that's a really great perspective to be able to give with that. And for Andrew to be doubting so heavily, and Peter to say to him, you're the one who told me that he's the Messiah. Do I really need to remind you? The fact that Andrew grieves so heavily over John, and unless I've missed it, they just know that John's in prison. They don't know that John's dead yet. And so just the fact that even early on in this time, because I don't even think it's been a year yet in their timeline through season two. I don't even think they've been with Jesus a year, and they're already at the point where, is this the one? You know, am I doubting? Is this the right way to go? And they're constantly questioning it, but, you know, it's still a good thing. And yeah, and when the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, you know, of all the things he said, he's like, can I say goodbye to my mom? I just thought that was beautiful, and I thought that was special. And I was really appreciative of that, and the whole interaction of Jesus being interviewed, and him and Quintus just, you know, I think Quintus saw the authority, saw the power, but also didn't want to push it because he knew it could be a political nightmare. But for him just to think that that was going to resolve itself, I think was also naive in that capacity. And yeah, with the guy concerned about Matthew, or the fact that Matthew's former boss was also just concerned about that he was eating well and that he was getting good food, like the fact that the Roman guard cared more about Matthew than we saw his family care about Matthew, I just thought was sweet. Like, that's not a relationship I would have expected and to really last. And just seeing Andrew have a full breakdown later too was also pretty disheartening. Because I know what it feels like to have the anxieties of everything just blow up in you, and your faith seems like the easiest thing to push around. But that's a good thing. And one of my line is my favorite line from Simon. He's like, I'm not a zealot anymore, just zealous. And you know, I love that. He's like, look, bro, I'm not trying to kill anybody. I just get hyper. And you know, I love the idea that his change was so quick. Because he is referred to as Simon the Zealot. And so that's literally, you know, a label of who he was. But he's like, I'm not a zealot anymore, just zealous. And it was also kind of nuts to see Mary's response to all these kids squabbling, stressing her out. And that they were just frustrating and stressing her out when it came to Jesus. And how their ministry, because I know that I've not seen season 3 yet, and it may get covered in some capacity. But I also, you know, Jesus had siblings, brothers and sisters from Mary and Joseph. And I imagine there had to be a lot of squabbling in their household in terms of who Jesus was and how they accepted it. And I know that I know there's some scenes with that coming in season 3. Yeah, the fact that it was stressing out his mom, you know, I thought it was great. And then the couple of people in the town that were giving testimony, that they took the responsibility to go tell about Jesus, even when he hadn't commanded them to or given them instruction to, because when you change, you want to share it with people. And Jesus and Quintus was fun. And making the statement later on that you're all going to have to do this when things get hard. That when he's saying that, you know, you're going to have to band together, you're going to pray together, you're going to have to deal with this frustration. He's like, what are you going to do when I'm not here? You know, what are you going to do when I'm not physically present? And he makes the statement, prayer is the first step in getting the mind and heart right. And I loved that, and that they wanted to learn how to pray the right way. And, you know, I haven't done it yet, but every time they do their, like, good morning prayer in the show, it makes me think, I want to do that. I should learn that good morning prayer and start doing that when I wake up. I haven't done it yet, but it's a thought that crosses my mind. And when we're doing now, on to the last episode of season 2. I am still loving the flashbacks as we get some biblical history. But here's the thing. They didn't give us a context. So when they were selling the fields, I thought, oh, okay, this is some old biblical story. But it wasn't. And, you know, as we go on to also see the disciples just arguing amongst each other and fighting about what Jesus is and isn't doing, I'm going to say this. I would not have lasted in that crew. I don't deal well with that much aggression. I don't deal with that much over-testosterone assertion. And I can barely function with a staff of 5 or 6 pastors. So if you put me in that kind of, like, chunky situation of constant bickering, I'd lose my ish pretty easily in that capacity. So, you know, they're handling it well, but man, it's a lot to deal with. And thinking that in all the behind the scenes stuff and all the moments we didn't see, there were times where all these people were roaming around together and just struggling to exist, even when Jesus was or wasn't there. Now, let me say, I called that dude being Judas from the first bar scene. I was gonna say, man, this guy's got sorrowful eyes, even back when they were buying the property. And as he was talking to his partner at the bar, I was like, this is Judas. This is 100% Judas, because the dude sounds emo. He sounds like he's torn between wanting the truth and wanting wealth. He's torn between the idea that things aren't really happening, and he's got the hope of a dreamer and the bitterness of a cynic. And as he was interacting with, I was like, this guy's going to be Judas. And I said that, and I was just like, you guys watch. It's going to be Judas. Because I hadn't seen Judas in anything yet. But I just thought it was a brilliant way, because he's emo, he's focused on death, he's smart. And I just thought, really great intro for him. Shammai and the Pharisees, and like when they're sitting there planning how they were going to spread dissension and the rumors and stuff like that, I hate that that's what any church ever is like. And, you know, I know we don't know that this is the full exact accuracy of it or anything, but man, it feels like this is stuff that could happen today, like it could happen 2,000 years ago. But just the fact that they were trying so hard to divide, and that, sadly, that's sometimes just what God's people do, even when it's the least godly thing possible. But seeing them do it... as Matthew and Jesus were talking, and they were talking about the disciples disagreeing, and Jesus made the statement, disagreeing is bound to happen with something that is open to all. You know, that fighting, that the dissension, the different perspectives, and he said that this is bound to happen with something that is open to all. And as Jesus was standing on that hillside looking down on the people, it really felt to me like this was almost like a tribes of Judah situation, or the tribes of Israel situation, where he was looking at the disciples, each representing different factions of believers, and seeing how they interacted was like seeing how the whole church was going to interact. But for him to say that, that's, disagreeing is bound to happen, but that's going to happen with something that's open to all. And, and Matthew saying, you know, your statements are kind of alarming, and Jesus making the statement, I want revolution, not revolt. Because I think that's a lot of what social media is today. Social media today just wants revolt. They want anger. They want response. They want reaction. Jesus wants revolution. Jesus wants things to change. Not that it has to be something ugly. When Jesus kind of not lost his temper, but you could tell he was getting annoyed with Matthew. He's talking about, yeah, what do you think? I just came here to tell you to keep doing what you're doing, because that's worked so well for the last 1,000 years. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. Because this is the first time we actually see Jesus be more than just warm, fuzzy compassion, really. We've seen him stick it to the religious leaders a little bit, but not the aggressive actual teaching of, you know, I'm here for some gangster work. And, you know, that he's not here for us just to keep doing what we're doing. But the whole scene of Matthew criticizing the sermon, I loved that. I thought that was great. And I'm going to pause and say here I can't remember who it was in passing in the comments, but somebody had said that the idea of Jesus practicing his sermon was blasphemous. Now, Mary pointed out, you know, whatever you say, you'll be fine and everything like that. But I think for a biblical understanding of even in Colossians 4, where it tells us that we need to make the most of every opportunity when we're dealing with outsiders, that our words should be full of grace, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how to answer each one. The idea that scripture teaches us that we need to make sure we're choosing our words carefully and using them wisely to fit everyone in the situation. Jesus, I don't believe Jesus had to practice or had to rehearse, but as we saw in, you know, Luke, where it tells us in Luke chapter 2 that he gained in wisdom and understanding, I don't think that he wouldn't have not. There's probably a lot of double negatives in there. I think that there probably would have been an element of him preparing to make sure that he was reaching the right people the right way and the right things. And I don't think that's a wrong idea to think that Jesus would have gone over his message, because there's a responsibility to it and he knows that this is what it is. Now, is it something I ever thought about before? Absolutely not. I never once thought of Jesus rehearsing a message. But I'll tell you this too, there's a different pastoral ways of doing that, and people do it differently in general. For instance, like on the pastoral team I worked with, previously had a staff member where they would write a sermon, and then he would practice it 3 or 4 times, like out loud to his dog, before he actually preached it. For me, I make bullet points and teach. Like, I'm not going to rehearse a message out loud over and over again. It's just not how I do things. And, you know, there are different preaching styles and different teaching styles. I don't think Jesus ever had to prepare to tell the truth. But if he was concerned about actually delivering it as best as possible in terms of reaching people, I think he would have considered that. And as he also stated, brevity is preferred. You know, keep it short. But also the fact that he's like not going to sound as crazy as Solomon, because Solomon was like, woo. I thought that was hilarious because Solomon is an emo boy and he goes in a lot of different ways and he goes a lot of different directions. So I appreciated that. Him matching up the Beatitudes, the blessed are the this, blessed are that, him matching that up to individual disciples or groups of disciples, I thought that was gorgeous. I thought that was beautiful. That was spiritually encouraging. And I was super grateful I got to see that take place, because I thought that was freaking brilliant. When they were trying to dress Jesus up with a splash of color, and he makes reference to my passage of Isaiah 53, where it actually says that he would have nothing attractive about him that would draw people to him. He said, "Are you trying to change the prophecy about me?" So he took that as a reality, that he understood that his physical appearance was not going to be something that drew people to him. And then season 2 cuts to the reveal that we've just met Judas and the big crowd on the hill and where things are going to go from there. And I've heard things about season 3 already, just from friends and family and stuff. This has been my review of season 2. And we've covered season 1 on previous podcasts as well. And I just want to say thanks for listening if you care. I've had good interactions with people talking about this. And before I roll out, I want to take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters who help cover the fees that make all this stuff happen as well. And I'm actually about to leave for a con today, so the appreciation is fresh. So I want to take a moment to thank Scott Ward, Alicia Benson, Candace Davis, Jay Shee, Jillian, Jason Crutchfield, Mike Perna, Todd Turner, John Jacobs, Zach Harris, Caleb Graham, Jeanette Skaggs, Chris Poirier, Jason Bullock, Christina Ray, Sarah Lewis, Patrick Gale, Rebecca Godlove, Adam Davis, and it looks like we have a new Patreon supporter, Tesh, that signed up as well. And I just want to say thank you for helping make all of this possible, because even as like I'm preparing for the expenses of doing a big show this weekend, it's like, oh, y'all really do make this possible. So thank you. And I appreciate you. And you'll hear more back on this when I actually find time to watch season 3. Y'all have a great day.